then somebody said dates, and that is an interpretation of Kroni Devashya, because it's kind of divided, but often they'll draw a picture of a date for the honey because they say it was today in the Middle East. You have examples of this where you crush the fruit, or you crush it and you boil it and it becomes like a syrup, and it's a common thing you do with dates, because one argument is that honey, out of all of these, let me just add the fig too, that's number 7 here. Out of all of these, this is false. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 8. Out of all of these are all domesticated, or they're all done by humans. And so one argument is, why would honey, which is a wild type of thing, be listed in this group? But I don't know. It's debatable.
Just don't sound like, you know, land and milk and eggs.
Right. Okay, well, anyways, so fig. Fig is a very important part of what is Canaan, this land, this area here. As Deuteronomy 8 talks about, and like, go to Numbers chapter 20, when the spies go into the land, what do they bring back to Moses? Right? Grapes. Numbers chapter 20, verse 5. Oh, sorry. Keep your finger there. Go to Numbers 13, verse 23 first. Numbers 13, 23. It says, when they reached the valley of Eshkol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes, and two of them carried it on a pole between them. So that's the famous symbol, right, of these two guys carrying this cluster of grapes. But then look at the next sentence there.
Pomegranate and figs.
Along with pomegranates and figs. So out of this list, you know, you could say the pomegranate. What links the pomegranate and the grape and the fig together? They're more like a fruit, maybe? Who knows? But they're bringing it back. And so, what time of year must this be? In the summer, right? Probably August. Because both pomegranate, grapes, and figs are essentially the same time period for harvest. August, September, around that time period. Now, go back to that other verse that I had you keep your finger in, Numbers 20. This is kind of ironic, this verse here, after you've just read what we've just read. Because what does it say in Numbers 20, verse 5?
Why
did you bring us up out of Egypt in this terrible place that has no grain or figs, grapevines, or pomegranates? Right. So, kind of like that glass is half empty or half full. Because they just brought all of this stuff in, according to Numbers 13. And the rebels, the ones who are revolting, they don't see it.
Yes, but this is still in the wilderness.
Right. Okay, so they're talking about before they've crossed in. Right. So, good. Okay, now, figs. Has anyone ever picked figs from a tree in here?
Yes.
Never seen a fig. Okay, well, a couple months late. Yeah, I'm sure Dove has picked many a fig. So figs, when they are picked, how long are they good for?
Not long.
Right.
They ripen very quickly.
And they rot just as quickly. So you've got to eat them very quickly, in other words. What's the other thing that you can do to figs?
You
Or you can make jam.
Dry them.
And that is, that's a big example in the Bible of dried figs. They would make fig cakes and the vela. Let's go to a couple examples. 1 Samuel 25. The story of David and Nabal and Abigail. Remember, Nabal had insulted David, and so Abigail, the wife of Nabal, went to David. And what did she do? Verse 18, Abigail lost no time. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 dressed sheep, 5 seahs of roasted grain, 100 cakes of raisins, and 200 cakes of pressed figs, and loaded them on donkeys. And she took those to David and his men. So, 200 cakes of pressed figs. There's other stories where you have the one Egyptian guy runs away. And go to chapter 30 of 1 Samuel. When David leaves Ziklag, and the bandits come and they destroy it. They take all of the people away in captivity. And this one guy runs away and comes to David. And 1 Samuel 30, verse 11. They found an Egyptian in a field, and they brought him to David, and they gave him water to drink and food to eat, part of a cake of pressed figs and 2 cakes of raisins. He ate and was revived, for he had not eaten any food or drunk any water for 3 days and 3 nights. And David asked him, "To whom do you belong?" And he says, "I'm an Egyptian, a slave, and an Amalekite," and so on. This slave had been with the Amalekites when they had attacked Ziklag. And the point is the food they had on them, their fast food or their chips and their Cheetos, were raisins and fig cakes. And there's a few other examples too in this. Now, let's talk about the fig. Can you think of other, before we get to the New Testament, because there's quite a few famous examples there, and that's where we're going to end with.
Second Kings. Chapter 20.
Okay.
Verse 7.
Let's go to 2 Kings chapter 20.
Verse 7.
Okay, so this is a story of Hezekiah, King Hezekiah. And he is sick. And the prophet Isaiah comes to him. And what does he say? Do to help Hezekiah. Anybody know this story? This famous story? Right. Take the fig and put it on his boil.
Dvela.
And it's dvela. Right. One of the things I was going to bring up, if you've ever been up picking figs in a fig tree, and if you don't have like long pants on or long shirts or things like that, it can get kind of hairy up there because the fig has a sap or a, I don't know what it's got inside of it.
It's a white sap.
Yeah. I know it's a sap, but I'm saying I don't know what kind of chemicals are inside of it, but it's some nasty stuff that can give you some serious rashes. And so obviously it's got some powerful properties inside of it. So I haven't done a lot of research into what all that is, but obviously it could probably be used for good if you've found it the right purpose for it. So here's an example that they're using it in a medical situation. So who knows exactly what it was all about, but it was helping his boil. So that's another example. But here's a question. Before we get to the New Testament, when you think of an idiom or something in the Old Testament involving the fig tree, can you think of... Does anything come to mind?
Amos.
Okay, we're going to come to Amos. We'll be there. But before we get there, how about everyone under his vine and his own fig tree? If you've heard that expression used before. Let's go to 1 Kings 4. Verse 25. During Solomon's lifetime, Judah and Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, lived in safety, each man under his own vine and fig tree.
In Hebrew, it's
1
Kings 5:5.
Yeah.
Sorry, what did you say,
man? 1 Kings 5:5 in Hebrew. Let me just get out my Hebrew here. So what is that saying?
Peace.
Shelter under them.
Actually, security.
Right. Peace, security.
That's what it says, La Vetach.
Right. Yeah. It even says it there. La Vetach. So, another example. Check out 2 Kings 18. Second Kings 18:31. Remember when Hezekiah is surrounded by the Assyrians, and Jerusalem surrounded by the Assyrians, and they send someone to try to negotiate Jerusalem's surrender, an Assyrian captain or officer. And what does he tell Hezekiah and the people?
Yeah, not Hezekiah. He tells the people, don't listen to Hezekiah.
Right. Because Hezekiah is saying we're not gonna surrender, and he's saying do surrender because you'll get to live. and you'll get to eat from your own fig tree, eat from your own grapevine. So again, it's that same idea of safety and security. The fig and the grape, the vine, eating from it or being underneath it. It's this idyllic expression of this security. So now we're going to progress a little more now into the prophets, which we're going to look at Amos in a second.
Jeremiah 8
is a good one. Okay, let's go there.
Of course.
Jeremiah 8:13. Jeremiah is living in what time period? What's happening to Jerusalem? Sorry? Okay, so the Babylonians are going to take the city, or they're threatening. And so this is time, not the Assyrians, the Babylonians. And they are threatening. And this is what part of the language of God's prophetic word here. Jeremiah 8:13. I will take away their harvest, declares the Lord. There will be no grapes on the vine. There will be no figs on the tree, and their leaves will wither. What I have given them will be taken from them. So you got a picture here of what?
The blessing of God, they have a picture.
It's a blessing, and now it's being used to explain what?
Judgment.
Yeah. Like, it's not a good ending, basically, right? Let's look at Jeremiah chapter 5, just before. Jeremiah Jeremiah chapter 5, look at verse 15. O house of Israel, declares the Lord, I am bringing a distant nation against you, an ancient and enduring nation, a people whose language you do not know, whose speech you do not understand. Their quivers are like an open grave. All of them are mighty warriors. They will devour your harvests and food, devour your sons and daughters. They will devour your flocks and herds. They will devour your what? Vines and fig trees. So again, the fig tree and the vine here is a sense of stability, that life is going about as normal, and it's there's nothing to worry about. But here, it's going to be gone. It's going to be taken. Let's go to a couple other prophets. Hosea 2. Hosea 2. And what the prophet Hosea, who is he talking to? Okay, he's talking to Israel, Northern Kingdom. And who is Hosea married to? Gomer. And she's a
Divlaim.
Right, Divlaim, which is could be a play on Tvela, the fig cake. I didn't mention that earlier. Remember the fig cake, the dried fig cakes that are in Hebrew, it's Tvela. And it says here in Hosea chapter, let's see, chapter 1, verse 3. So he married Gomer, daughter of Diblaim, which is kind of it's a two cakes, maybe. And so Gomer's father is Diblaim. So maybe there's a connection there to figs. So look at Hosea chapter 2, verse 12. Or let's look at verse 9. I'll start in verse 9. I will take away my grain when it ripens, my new wine when it is ready. I will take back my wool and my linen, intended to cover her nakedness. Remember, he's talking about Israel as his bride who had gone and played a prostitute. I will expose her lewdness before the eyes of her lovers. No one will take her out of my hands. I will stop all her celebrations, her yearly festivals, her new moons, her Sabbath days, all her appointed feasts. I will ruin her vines and her fig trees, which she said were her pay from her lovers. I will make them a thicket, and wild animals will devour them. So you've got your wine wineries, caverns, orchards being, basically going down, being destroyed, not being upkept. Go to Joel. Joel is the next prophet right after Hosea. Joel chapter 1. How would you summarize the book of Joel? What's his prophecy? Maybe. Sorry?
Day of the Lord.
Day of the Lord. Destruction. Prophets, they all seem to wear black. They're not they generally don't have too much happiness to pass around. So Joel chapter 1, verse 7, or look, verse 6. A nation has invaded my land, powerful and without number. It is the teeth of a lion, the fangs of a lioness. It has laid waste my vines. It has ruined my fig trees, stripped off their bark, thrown it away, leaving their branches white. Go to verse 12. The vine is dried up. The fig tree is withered. The pomegranate, the palm, and the apple tree, all the trees of the field are dried up. Surely the joy of mankind is withered away. Then go to Tapuach. It's in Song of Songs too.
What is it? The apple has been withered.
I'm not in what you call a botanist. What?
It wasn't native to the region.
No, I don't think.
All right.
These trees must have taken the grape and flourished if they cultivated. But
Here, let me just.
I'm not saying. I just wonder if this was the first time. You know, cause we always had that picture of the garden eating an apple.
Give me one second, and I'll tell you something. Okay, tapuach probably refers to the apple tree, but other scholars have suggested apricot, citron, or quince. And let me
see.
Right, at 12, but it's. Yeah. And let me just tell you where else. No. It's an interesting question, actually.
I mean, it all kind of comes back to how you date the different books anyway. As to who's first.
He quotes Solomon, so, you know, that would explain something from somewhere else when he brought in. You know, being his way because of people coming in and out.
Yeah. We'll have to look at it later. But so also go to chapter 2, verse we're in Joel, right? Joel chapter 2, verse 22. Be not afraid, O wild animals, for the open pastures are becoming green. The trees are bearing their fruit. The fig tree and the vine yield their riches. Be glad, O people of Zion. Rejoice in the Lord your God, for he has given you the autumn rains and righteousness. So there is some hope here in Joel. He's not just saying it's hopeless. But again, when there is that blessing again, it will be that the fig tree will bear its fruit. So let's keep going here. Go to one of the most well-known ones I know is Habakkuk. Habakkuk chapter 3. Uh-huh. Habakkuk again is like all the other prophets. There's a lot of doom and gloom. But then he says in verse 17, though the fig tree does not bud, and there are no grapes on the vines, though the olive crop fails, and the fields produce no food, though there are no sheep in the pen, and no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God my Savior. So again, it's the same picture that the fig tree is a part of this whole agricultural image of. It's like a thermometer. It measures if something's good or not. And I guess you can say it's common sense. A couple more examples in the prophets. Haggai, chapter 2, which is another book over from where we are. Haggai, chapter 2, verse 19. Is there yet any seed left in the barn? Until now, the vine and the fig tree, the pomegranate and the olive tree have not borne fruit. From this day on, I will bless you. So, again, kind of one more example of the fig tree.
It's a very strange constellation.
So, Nahum 3:13. Nahum 3:13
is about him too. Yeah, Nahum 3:13 or 3:12 talks about figs falling, being like the cities of Jerusalem, of Israel, Judah. Okay, so this is kind of a quick summary of so far here of the fig. And it is a fruit that bears in the summer, just like the pomegranate and the grape. It's a very sweet fruit. It's very but it's also very fragile, and it can be destroyed if it's not picked properly. People will also steal it, because if you see a ripe fig, you know it's not going to last very long, so you might as well eat it if the owner isn't paying attention. There is another name for figs in the Bible. It has another name. I want to call it a nickname. What? No, no, just fig in general. Anybody know? It's called summer fruit. Have you ever seen that translation in your Bible? In Hebrew, it's kites. What's kites normally?
Summer.
Okay. So this, and let me see if I can pull up a couple examples here, just to give you that feeling of where it's at. 2 Samuel 16, verse 2. Remember when David is running away from Abishalom? Sorry. Yeah.
Absalom.
He's leaving the city, and in 2 Samuel chapter 16, verse 2, he meets a guy named Ziba. Ziba. And he is related to Saul. I believe it's Saul. Anyways, don't quote me on that. And he brings with him, what does he bring with him? What's it say? Summer fruit? Does another translation have anything else?
Figs.
Figs. Okay. In the Hebrew it says
kites.
Umea kites. He brought 100 of these figs, or this summer fruit. Another example is Isaiah 28, verse 4. And we won't go look at all of these. Another one is Jeremiah 8, 20. And Jeremiah 40, verse 10. And so figs, ke'ena is the normal word, but it also has another name, kites. So, now we go to Amos. Amos chapter 8. Everyone goes to Amos chapter 8. Okay, verse 1. The Sovereign Lord showed me this. I saw a basket of summer fruit, klufkites. He said, "What do you see, Amos?" And I said, "A basket of summer fruit, klufkites." Then the Lord said to me, "The end has come for my people Israel. I will no longer overlook their sins." I'm going to read this verse in Hebrew. Vayomer, matavoe Amos, va'omar klufkites. Vayomer Adonai Elai, ba'haketz. El Ami Yisrael, lo osif od avor lo. Anybody notice the alliteration of the words there?
Very obvious.
Yeah, very obvious. Kites, klufkites, and ketzba.
Same as with Jeremiah, makel shaked, shaked.
Right. Yeah. Have you ever heard the example of Jeremiah when he talks about the almond branch? What do you see? Jeremiah, he says, "I see an almond branch." And then God says, "I'm watching over my people." And the Hebrew, or the two words there are plague, saying that the almond in Hebrew has the same root as to watch over. Okay, yeah, persevering. But in Amos here, he says, "What do you see? I see a basket of figs," but he's specifically using the word kites, which is kites, figs, whatever. It's a different word. And then God says ketz, ketzba. And what ketz is, the end. Where is it first used? Ketz. Something is coming to an end. In the book of Genesis, how about that?
The flood.
The flood. Okay, check out Genesis chapter 6.
Ketz Kol Basar.
Ketz Kol Basar. God says to Noah, Genesis chapter 6, verse 13, Ketz Kol Basar Ba. The end of all flesh is coming, or has come.
What chapter is it?
Genesis chapter 6, verse 13. And what did Amos just say that we just read in chapter 8? What is coming? The end of Israel. Again, we've got these ideas of, you know, you're being surrounded by these armies and there's judgment coming. Now, go to Ezekiel chapter 7. Ezekiel 7. We'll start in verse 1. The word of the Lord came to me. You, son of man, this is what the sovereign Lord says to the land of Israel. Ketz ba.
Ketz ba haketz.
Haketz al arbat knafot ha'aretz. Then verse 3. Ata. Haketz aleich. The end is now upon you. Okay, everybody's hearing ketz, right? Okay. Go to verse 6. This is Ezekiel 7. Verse 6. Ketz ba. Ba haketz. Haketz aleich.
This is a wonderful.
It's great. This, because prophets are often poets in the Bible. The language they use is full of alliteration and literary, what do you call those things? Techniques. They play with the language. And it would be kind of like if Dr. Seuss was a poet, maybe. Something like that. Ezekiel, what is Ezekiel's prophecy about? What time period?
The future, the end times.
The future, but when he's alive, he's in the exile.
Yeah.
And in the 600s.
Right? And what is he talking about in general?
The fall of Jerusalem.
The fall of Jerusalem, right? Because he's been taken captive to Babylon, but before the final destruction of Jerusalem in 586. So he's sending messages back to the home camp saying Haketz ba. And so this is where we're going with all of this. Let's see here. Let us go now to the New Testament. What are the stories that we know in the New Testament about figs, fig trees? Okay, Jesus cursed a fig tree. Why?
No fruit, but on the fig tree there's little fig rot first before the actual figs come.
Right.
And the fig rot is a like tiny indication.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's just look at that story. We'll read it real quick. It appears in Matthew and Mark. If you go to Matthew chapter 21. Matthew 21 verse 19. Or say verse 18. Early in the morning, as he was on his way back to the city, he was hungry. Seeing a fig tree by the road, he went up to it, but found nothing on it except leaves. So What time of year is this? What's just happened in this chapter? Jesus has the triumphant entry, right? Which we call in our Christian practice today, Palm Sunday, right? Palm Sunday is usually when?
April, March,
spring. So is there going to be fruit on the tree? No. So what's Jesus doing? So what does he say? He said to it, "May you never bear fruit again." Immediately the tree withered. When the disciples saw this, they were amazed. How did the fig tree wither so quickly? They asked. Jesus replied, "I tell you the truth, if you have faith and do not doubt, not only can you do what was done to the fig tree, but also you can say to this mountain, 'Go throw yourself into the sea,' and it will be done. If you believe, you will receive whatever you ask for in prayer." So, anybody got any answers for why Jesus cursed the fig tree? Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I've had someone teach on this and relate it to the story of the Garden of Eden and the fig tree being used.
Being for the covering?
And the probability that might have been the forbidden fruit in the garden.
Uh huh. Right. No, I'm sure that, yeah, there have been people who have seen maybe the fruit they weren't supposed to eat in the garden was the fig. Some people thought it was grapes because grapes make wine. And then at some point it became the apple in medieval Europe with translation.
Well, we've seen that the fig tree talks about or gives a picture of security, of safety.
Right, right.
So maybe Jesus is saying it's going to be removed now. I'm removing the covering.
Right, right. And some people have interpreted the fig tree to represent Israel. Not just because of all of the things we've talked here about, but also there is an example in Hosea chapter 9 where it talks about Israel being the figs, and also in Jeremiah 24 he says there's two baskets of figs. There's some good figs and there's some bad figs, and the good figs are the righteous of Israel, and they've already been taken captive to Babylon, and the bad figs are the ones like Zedekiah and his ilk. Remember, he was the last king of Judah. So there have been those who have seen that maybe when Jesus, he's just left the temple, he was rejected or whatever, and with his triumphal entry, and then maybe this is a symbolic portrayal of that rejection, and like you said, like time is coming for a judgment. But what I want to look at now, as we kind of tie this all together, is probably the most famous parable regarding a fig tree. And which one is that? Everyone usually knows it.
The Olivet discourse.
Right, in Matthew 24. So let's end there. Matthew chapter 24, verse 32. It appears in Matthew, Mark, and in Luke. Matthew and Mark are very similar. Luke's quite different, and we're going to look at that one in a second. But we'll first read this one. Matthew 24, verse 32. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender, or its branches, and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. And let me just read a little before that to give it some context. in verse 27. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and all the nations of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory, and he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call. And they will gather his elect from the four winds and from one end of the heavens to the other. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. No one knows about that day or hour. Not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. So, any ideas? Or what do you find in this reading here? Okay, let's look at Isaiah 34. Oh, Isaiah 4?
No.
34, right? Yeah. Let's look at Isaiah 34. Isaiah 34, verse 1. Come near, you nations, and listen. Pay attention, you peoples. Let the earth hear and all that is in it, the world and all that comes out of it. The Lord is angry with all nations. His wrath is upon all their armies. He will totally destroy them. He will give them over to slaughter. Their slain will be thrown out. Their dead bodies will send up a stench. The mountains will be soaked with their blood. All the stars of the heavens will be dissolved. And the sky rolled up like a scroll. All the starry hosts will fall, like withered leaves from the vine, like shriveled figs from the fig tree. Interesting. Again, we have the grapevine and we have the fig tree. They're parallel to each other and they're kind of collapsing. And these figs are falling from the fig tree. When do figs fall from a tree? When they're ripe or they're too ripe. And also when a strong wind blows through, right? Like you just said, in Matthew 24, we just read, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. So you have this idea of the shaking, just like with the fig tree. It's going to shake and the figs are going to fall out of it. This is also used or quoted from in Revelation chapter 6. Revelation chapter 6 verse 12 with the seven seals. Revelation 6:12. I watched as he opened the sixth seal. There was a great earthquake. The sun turned black like sackcloth made of goat hair. The whole moon turned blood red. And the stars in the sky fell to earth as late figs drop from a fig tree when shaken by a strong wind. The sky receded like a scroll rolling up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. Then the kings of the earth, the princes, the generals, the rich, the mighty, and every slave and every free man in hidden caves and among the rocks of the mountains. And they called us to the mountain, and they called to the mountains and the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath has come, and who can stand? Now, what is Isaiah 34 about? Judgment? Judgment on who?
Nations.
So how is that different than Amos chapter 8? Amos chapter 8 is a judgment on Israel.
And verse 8, it says, For the day of the Lord's vengeance and a year of wrath because of the controversy of Zion. You know, it's like you see right now we have controversy with the planet.
Right, okay, so it's kind of like a defense. Now, going back to Matthew 24, learn the lesson or the parable of the fig tree. What was the, remember again, the in Hebrew, the word, one of the words for figs is kites.
Kites.
And the word for end
kits.
Is kits. And what's the word for summer? Kites. And here you see in Matthew 24, verse 32, learn the lesson of the fig tree. When its leaves are coming out, you know that summer is near. So you have kites and kites if you were to go back into the Hebrew underbelly. And we know from Amos that this is a play on words involving what? The end, right? Kets. Just like he comes down in verse 36, verse 37, as it was in the days of Noah. Well, what was it in the days of Noah? Judgment. It was kets. It was the end that it is here. Now, how should we read this? Should we read this as a negative prophecy or a positive prophecy? Sorry? Okay. I mean, I guess it depends how you... Right.
Depends on which side of the arch you're on.
Right, right. Or it depends on which side of the wall of Jerusalem you're on. Because who will be surrounding Jerusalem after the time of Jesus? The Romans, right? 70, the Romans are going to destroy Jerusalem. So I just want to end with Luke chapter 21, Luke's version of this, and maybe end with a positive look at it. Luke 21, verse 25. Luke 21, verse 25. There will be signs in the sun, moon, and stars. On the earth, nations will be in anguish and perplexity at the roaring and tossing of the sea. Men will faint from terror about what's coming on the world, for the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And when these things begin to take place, stand up and lift up your heads, because your redemption is drawing near. Look at the fig tree and all the trees. When they sprout leaves, you could interpret this here as when they produce their fruit, by the way. It's not specific. You can see for yourselves and know that summer is near. Even so, when you see these things happening, you know that the kingdom of God is near. So, I just want to kind of end here with this idea that there is a judgment and there is an end coming and there is hope. And specifically, notice this verse 28. When these things begin to take place, stand up and lift up your heads, because your redemption is drawing near. And so, it's nice to look at things like the fig tree, and you see it in nature, and you see it out there, and it teaches us stuff. God teaches us through His creation. So, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
You know, all those nervous things people are afraid of, but Yeshua said, don't be afraid of people who can kill you.